fans on this Saturday night, we can celebrate with red, white, and rosé. Yes, while the 4th of July might look and feel a little different this year, it doesn't mean you can't enjoy a little wine over dinner, a glass on your patio, or send a bottle or two to friends to let them know you're thinking of them. There's still time to pick up your Priest Ranch favorites before the holiday. Priest Ranch invites you to enjoy the following offer and savor a little red, white, and rosé just in time for the 4th of July. Now, listen carefully. $25 two-day air shipping on 6-plus bottles or more. Use promo code July 4th at checkout. It's applicable at the entire wine shop. You can shop the Priest Ranch Wines collection. The offer expires at midnight on July 4th, 2020. So I know we've talked about this a lot over the course of the season that we've had so far, but the offers get better every week. So this is the one coming up for July 4th. And info at PriestRanchWines.com, 707-944-8200. Absolutely check it out. All right, this brings us to Original Joe's, of course, and Two Guys Talking Ball at the counter. And we welcome in the San Francisco Chronicle's Bruce Jenkins. Bruce, how are you?
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good, pretty good. I must tell you, your stories this week, we're getting ready for baseball. It's not really speculation anymore. We've got the extra inning rules coming up. We've got a schedule coming up, and you've got some opinions on it, and I'd love to hear them.
Well, yeah, with the DH being universal and perhaps that becomes permanent and the runner on second, you know, these are not things that I really like, but I've tried to be diplomatic, especially in print about it, and not, you can't get terribly upset over every little thing. Not that these are little, these are big things. I'm not sure the runner on second is going to last beyond this year, but, I've talked to people around the game, and even somebody like Mike Kruko, who goes, I'm okay with all this stuff, which I've found interesting to hear. And, it does prompt a lot of discussion. In terms of the DH, one point I tried to make is that if you look around the guys who are going to be doing this, it's a pretty good group of hitters. I mean, just on and on, really. J.D. Martinez and Daniel Murphy and maybe a little Cespedes and maybe a little Vlad Guerrero. And the Giants have some good options. So it's certainly not going to be terrible to watch. I mean, I've watched hundreds of DH games, and I'm not, sitting there going, damn it, throwing a tomato at my computer or something. It's different, but it's still ball. And, with the runner on second, I think, that's going to prompt an awful lot of discussion. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I'm sure it won't be as predictable as, drop a bun, hit a sacrifice fly every time. So let's hope so.
No, you said if you could get that bunt to the right side, you may be able to start beating hits out. And it brings me back to, I saw it in the 1970 World Series. That was on this MLB this week, which was a terrific World Series. It was Brooks Robinson's World Series. I mean, he owned it. But Tony Cloninger is a good hitting pitcher. We remember he hit the two grand slams against the Giants.
Yeah.
But he did what is known as the bunt and slash, where, he fakes the bunt, and then he takes a swing. And, Bruce, you've got everybody running all over the place. And I was just thinking, with the runner on second, and instead of doing the traditional bunt them over to third or a drag bunt along the first baseline to try to get another hit and create more havoc, just put the ball in play. You got people running all over the place, and you can score a run.
No doubt, yeah. And I hope that happens. It's going to be the great thing about it is it's going to encourage situational hitting. See where the defense is playing you. Lord knows, Tony Gwynn and Rod Carew would take this strategy apart. Especially if there was some kind of shift in play. But those are the kinds of things that I think are going to make it interesting. And for me, anything that that brings back, small ball or whatever you want to call it, intelligent baseball, as opposed to every guy trying to hit one to the distant planets, I'm for that. So we'll see.
Well, someone may actually choke up on the bat.
Imagine that.
Someone may be Pete Rose, like, choke up on the bat and try to put the ball in play somewhere. Your column, I thought, was terrific about it, and we touched on it with Ron Wotus and Bill Lasky last week a little bit, because they were both lamenting the fact, you know, of the DH and not having, you know, the strategy of the game. And I said, well, wait a minute. You know, in the 10th inning, the strategy is back 50-fold. To try to get that guy in. And you better get him in. It's like college football. You better score the first time, because if you don't, you're in trouble.
Yeah. You know, I think given the state of the game and the uncertainty about it, and it's such a different season, you know, the timing is really good for all of this stuff. You know, the three batter minimum for relief pitchers. And I just think any kind of novelty really can't hurt right now. And we'll see how it goes with any luck they actually get the season in, and then you know, we'll see where it goes from there in future years. The DH will disappear in the National League next year, which I like. And if his two sides can just calm down a little bit and not be so obsessed about, you know, what if we lock everybody out in 2022 and all that nonsense, maybe some clear heads will prevail.
Well, if they can make it through, honestly, this crazy spring training where they've got things set up in the hallway and lockers in the media room and taking a shower, you know, parking lot and whatever they got going, if you can make it through that and make it through this season with traveling to Texas and Arizona and places like that, and then make it through the gauntlet of a playoff. The trophy, as I've said, should not be given by Rob Manfred. It should be given by Dr. Fauci.
That's General Patton.
Really, or somebody.
Yeah.
This is something to behold if this can happen. And let's see, you know, all we can do. But the one thing I did want to touch on, the DH, because you did bring it up. You know, it was always a negative for the Giants, a real minus, going back to, as you point out, 2002. I think they're not a minus anymore at the DH. You got Pence and Dickerson and Darren Ruff, who had a, you know, looks like a classic DH kind of guy.
Yeah.
You've got Sandoval from the left side. He's got some choices. He's got Posey as well.
Yeah, it's good because, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty about the lineup in certain spots, especially the outfield. And, you know, at a time when, geez, Kapler's having a hard time deciding who to put out there. You know, you put that fourth guy in the DH slot, and you at least get a look at him hitting to see how he's doing there. And there's a lot to be said for that. I mean, you know, the traditional game is most appreciated, you know, in the morning when you're thinking about, you know, how the game should be played. But when you get to the park and there's a DH in there, it's not so horrible that you find the game, you know, intolerable. So I think that will help the Giants. I mean, you know, with the A's, they've got a natural in Chris Davis. Mm-hmm. He's absolutely set for that. So that's good. That's also good.
Yeah, I think the Giants are in better shape. I hate to say it, but, you know, I'm not handicapping 162. I'm handicapping 60. Mm-hmm. And there's no July 31st trade half the team, because that's not going to happen August 31st. So the team is here. You're getting half a season, or 60 games, a 37% of a season, whatever it is, from, you know, Samardzija and Cueto and Drew Smyly and people like that. You're not asking him to throw 200 innings. There are some spots that are going to be trouble. The bullpen, you don't know how strong the bullpen's going to be and how they're going to use 2 innings, 3 innings, 1 inning, who the closer is. And they didn't score many runs last year. And mm-hmm. that's for sure. But in a crazy way, I think this whole 60-game thing plays right into their hands, because they're going to play it, you know, sort of more like a video game. Every matchup we're going to take advantage of.
Yeah, and with the huge rosters, you're going to have a lot of players. You know, Joey Bart and maybe Ramos at your disposal. You know, I'm sure the A's will be looking. The A's, interestingly, put Tyler Soderstrom on. Are going to have him in Stockton, sort of at the ready. And I think, you know, with Farhan Zaidi last year, he was really just frantic moving players in and out. I don't think he's quite going to be of that mindset this year, because it's, you know, when it comes to the trading deadline, you're trading somebody you know, to another situation this year, that means a hell of a lot more than it just meant from going to San Francisco to Detroit. I mean, you know, it means going to, it might be going to Arizona, a hot spot you haven't heard about, but it is then. It uproots his family, it uproots his whole life. And there will be trades, but I don't think it'll be quite as frantic, and I know Farhan is aware of that. And, you know, he's got a lot of good choices within the organization where I don't think he's going to have to be quite as desperate as he was last year.
Well, it's going to be interesting, I'll tell you that. Farhan spoke out this week about the councilman in Scottsdale. I thought that was terrific.
Ah, I loved it. I mean, if you know, I've been around him a little bit. You know that he's got a personality, and he's a super bright guy, and he can be very funny and you know, very opinionated as well, and he's an interesting guy. But the fans don't really know anything about him. And they, I think a lot of them thought he's just sort of this milquetoast guy and whatever, and they don't really have any kind of opinion at all. But to to hear him just bring that up, he's talking to Annie Baggerly on the phone, and he pretty much just brought it up himself. I mean, I thought that was great, and I've heard from a lot of fans, you know, reading on Twitter and stuff and emails that, you know, right on, Farhan, way to go, man. Speak out. I love that, you know.
Yeah, it's terrific.
Yeah.
Terrific.
I personally thought it was tremendous myself, too, so that was great.
I enjoyed watching the 1970 World Series this week on TV. Kurt Gowdy was the broadcaster with Chuck Thompson and someone from the Reds who I was not familiar with. I think he said Jim McIntyre, but I didn't know. A couple
Wasn't
of things.
Al Michaels working that series?
No, it was 1970. I don't think Al was there yet.
Right, he did. He was later, yeah. Uh-huh.
But Sparky was the youngest manager in the major leagues at the time.
Oh, my gosh.
He still looked like the oldest manager in the major leagues, but he was, I think, 36 or something like that. But a couple of things struck me. One, of course, it was Brooks Robinson's World Series, and we saw some of the highlight plays, but he made so many other routine plays, spectacular plays, just look routine. And he had 9 hits in the series, which I think tied a record for a 5-game series. But, Bruce, they used the shift for Lee May. Everybody was over on the left side of the diamond. And for Boog Powell, everybody on the right side of the diamond for the big pull hitters. So I like seeing that it's not something we just saw today for the first time.
No, absolutely. I loved Lee May at that time. He was a tremendous hitter. Just watching him in there, the way he stepped in with his batting stance, he looked extremely dangerous. And he's saying, you know, do that if you want. I'm still going to jack one down the line. And I loved that. He wasn't like tapping the ball to the right side. And, you know, he took on the shift. And, you know, Brooks beat him most when it really mattered. But I still thought it was great that that Lee May said, you know, I'm Lee May, and this is what I'm going to do up here, which made for great theater. That whole series, we talked about 71 last week, but, you know, with the Orioles were such an interesting team and a great ballpark, and, you know, Frank Robinson and Brooks Robinson, that if anybody didn't know about him, they certainly did after that series, and Earl Weaver and the great pitching staff, and great contrast between the rich, pitching rich Orioles and the Reds, who are, you know, more about hitting and how we're going to get by here.
And they were kids. Gary Nolan, Wade Simpson, Milt Wilcox was 20. Don Gullett was 19. And then they had Tony Cloninger, who was older. But, yeah, I enjoyed it, but I really enjoyed it for the shift. And then listening to Kurt Gowdy. And, Bruce, we haven't talked a lot about Kurt Gowdy, but, look, football announcer, basketball announcer, Red Sox, baseball, NBC, game of the week. The guy was so easygoing listening to him that it was just a pleasure listening to Kurt Gowdy, a very special guy, I think, in the broadcasting chain.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, for fans of more recent vintage, you know, you hear a game with Jack Buck or Jim Nance or Al Michaels, whatever it is, and it's just comforting. I at least find it that way to be all with all of those guys. But I do go back far enough to remember when, you know, Kurt Gowdy was doing all the big NFL games, there's no question about it, at least the ones on his network. And, you know, people in Boston remembered him for being, you know, covering the Red Sox for years, doing a great job on their telecast. And then, you know, when he got to be national, he did the game of the week, and he got to be doing the World Series. So, yeah, it's just a great, a great thing. And I felt the same way, even more strongly about than Chuck Thompson. He's one of my all. He's in there with Jack Buck and Ernie Harwell and Vin Scully and Lon Simmons and our local guys. I just thought he was an absolute gem. I did like Gowdy, but Chuck Thompson, maybe just the tone of his voice was more soothing to me. But he was very special in Baltimore. Yeah.
Well, you mentioned Jack Buck. MLB did the special on Jack Buck this week, which was terrific with Tom Verducci and Bob Costas. And
I got to see that.
Oh, Bruce, do not miss it. Believe
me. Oh, my gosh.
I'm telling you, it's really good. And the one thing I realized about Jack Buck, he was a man of few words.
Yeah.
See you tomorrow night. You know, that kind of.
This is going to be a home run, folks.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, interesting.
Crazy. Yeah, it's just beautiful. And a few words, but choice words. And I have to think, you know, he wasn't sitting at home saying, well, what am I going to say here? He knew what to say, and he knew how to be concise about it, and then let the crowd take over, which is what so many of the great ones do, you know, Vin Scully being, you know, the one that I grew up with. But, oh, man, I really like Jack Buck. And, you know, talk about a great voice. I like Joe Buck, too. Joe Buck's very, very good, and he's another guy that you see kind of everywhere. But his dad, I think, was in a different league.
Completely.
Yeah.
So this stuff is good. MLB's doing a nice job. And I think this week, I think they do it every Monday, is Harry Carey is this week, which will be. Did you ever meet him, Bruce?
Yeah. I saw him in Don and Charlie's in Scottsdale, holding court there in the pink pony over the years in spring training. Cause, you know, the Cubs were there and I saw him in various states of imbibement, but he was always just, you know, hilarious. He was always Harry Carey. He wasn't like tripping over the curb and bumping into him, falling on his head on the taxi cab or something like that. Which I saw Bob Skinner do one night, which I wish I hadn't seen that. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. But he had a few too many and was kind of staggering around the street out there. But Harry Carey could really hold his liquor, and he was a great storyteller. You hear some of the stories about him that you can't tell on the air about hijacking the team bus for personal reasons. Let's just say that Harry's driving away from spring training in the team bus because he's got a date. Okay,
yes,
and,
I was gonna say,
he's in the team bus for God's sake. He'll be back in an hour.
Beautiful.
Oh my God, because he was larger than life. He could do these things. It's like, all right, Harry, just, you know, make sure you're back in time for the game, you know.
The rumor was he drove off with Gussie Bush's wife a few times.
And that knocked him out of St. Louis.
He denied it, but that knocked him out of St. Louis.
Exactly. Yeah.
Thank goodness. Hey, it's a couple of anniversaries in this day in baseball history, which we've enjoyed doing. Dusty Baker steals three bases in one inning. And apparently, in going into it a little more deeply, he steals second. Brenly's on first. And then they do a double steal. They go after Brenly at second. Brenly gets in a big rundown, so Dusty's safe at third. And while Brenly's in the rundowns, Dusty keeps going home, so he ends up with three steals in one inning.
So
my question to you is, we don't talk enough about Dusty as a player. And look, we go back to Hank Aaron and Rico Carty in those days when he first came up with the Braves. What about Dusty as a player?
Oh, just a tremendous player. One of the great left fielders, really. In the early 80s, I remember always being a fan of his before I started covering ball, and then especially when I started being around it. In his prime years with the Dodgers, I remember arguing vociferously on his behalf for MVP. Because he was somebody who influenced the game all night long, wherever he happened to be, on the bases, in the field, at the plate. He was a total badass hitter, Dr. Skull, the amazing Deadpool hitter, you know, like Lee May. He didn't care if the entire team was playing on the left side of the infield and outfield. He's gonna still take you deep there, hit one up the gap. But very smart outfielder. He had a good arm in his prime and could really run. And on top of all that, he was one of those guys, you know, if a fight breaks out, don't go near him. Just, you know, pretend you don't see him. And if he comes at you, especially pretend you don't see him. you know, very, very, he can really take care of himself. And but you know, and also a very gentle soul who could move around the clubhouse and know exactly what everybody needed at the time. They needed a pat in the back or like, hey, you better get on it, man. You're slacking here. Whatever it took, he knew exactly what to tell everybody in the clubhouse, and that's why he's a great manager and will be again this year.
Yeah, special player in baseball history.
Very much so.
Yeah, very special player. This weekend also celebrates the final game in the Kingdome in Seattle. And Ken Griffey Jr., of course, hits a three-run homer and makes a great catch. But the Kingdome eventually is imploded. But I've never been in the Kingdome, never saw a game in the Kingdome. And I'd love to get your thoughts about the Kingdome.
All I can say is I wish I'd been in charge of pulling the lever that blew it up. I went there so many times in the 1980s. I covered the A's, and that's where we went, you know, several times a year, three-game series, and just not one moment do I recall. Zero moments. I always thought about, you know, this is Seattle, okay? These are hardy people up here. These are people who don't use umbrellas, you know? And they don't have, maybe they don't have a coat on, and it's about to snow. What the hell's with the dome, you know? I could see it maybe in football season when it got so severe, but for baseball, it always struck me as just completely wrong that they played in a dome. And sure enough, the dome lived up to its horribleness every single night.
Mm. Well, there was some good video of it being imploded, and of course, we had the 95, you know, amazing season.
Well, that, I would have loved to have been there that night.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I was watching Dave Revering and Wayne Gross in there.
Okay. All right. Hey, one last thought. I mean, spring training is starting, and the challenges are ahead, Bruce. The real challenges of life and ball players. How are these players going to do all this stuff and keep it together? This is going to be something, isn't it?
I have no idea. I really don't. You know, players are so attuned to their routine. You know, they go to the park and they do this and that. Everybody's a little different, but they've got their things that they do. And everybody's life is turned upside down now. Nobody's routine is intact any longer. Whether it's the lockers or leaning on the dugout railing or whatever you do, you know, superstitions. And it's going to be, you know, whoever gets through this, to me, forget the asterisk, it's going to be a monumental achievement. And, you know, when the schedule comes out, which I imagine will be pretty soon, we already know basically who's playing who, but you know, they talk about who's got it tougher, who's got it easier. I mean, who can even say who's going to be on the rosters? I mean,
really?
There'll be players who don't want to even show up. And there'll be players who test positive and will go into quarantine. And if that happens, you know, too often on a team, then that team won't be recognizable. You say, well, it looking like the Dodgers and the Yankees. Well, you know, what if those teams are decimated?
Mm-hmm.
So it's just it's frightening, and I'm not optimistic at all, really. I mean, and that's all I'm going to say about it because I'm an optimist by nature, and we can talk about things that we hope will happen, and you know maybe they will, God willing. But it's very scary, and there's an awful lot they have to overcome, and it's going to be hard.
Well, we just have to let it play out week by week. And as I've said to people, you know, who knows, as you just said, where it's going to be in a month or 3 weeks or even tomorrow. But it's got to start somewhere, and they mm-hmm. had to make some rules. And the schedule is 60 games, and I think it favors the Giants and teams like that, you know, because they don't have to worry about getting through 162. And
yeah.
I really think it favors them, and we'll see where it goes. And then, again, you have this interleague stuff where, you know, they get the A's six times, but, you know, they're not playing, you know, the Red Sox and the Yankees and, you know, the Blue Jays and teams
yeah.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
So who knows? The toughest part for me is the travel, honestly.
Oh, boy, no kidding.
That's the toughest part for me is going mm-hmm. into cities where there's trouble. How do you go into Arizona and feel good about it?
Oh, my God. I mean, Farhan Zaidi was so right. You got a guy there. First of all, the guy's at a meeting where they're protesting the use of masks.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just one guy. He's got a full, you know, crowd standing ovation.
Yeah.
You know, this is the state that we're in here. And just, you know, trying to get from, you know, your house to the airport to the other airport to the hotel. Who the hell knows what's going to happen? You know, those things are, are precarious. So I and they don't even know what's coming. They don't even know some of the things that are going to happen.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Whoever wins the thing, I'll tell you what, it's almost more impressive than the 162 in its
way. I agree.
Way,
I agree with you 100%. 100%. Yeah. That's why the whoever you said General Patton, I said Fauci, but whoever's leading, you know, whoever
we reach of the two there somewhere.
Right, somewhere. All right, have a great evening and stay safe, and look, we're going to have a lot more news as each weekend unfolds here.
Yeah, yeah. I'm so glad we can talk about the possibility of playing ball, which is great. And thank you so much. It's always a pleasure, man.
All right. Take care, Bruce. Thank you. All right. That is the great Bruce Jenkins. More coming up. KMBR 680, 104.5, the sports leader.